You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
702 and Cape Talk.
Talking sex.
Hello, Dr. Eve.
Hello, Eusebius.
Are you dressed in your school uniform today? I can't fit into mine.
The fantasies that about. Yeah, I heard some people this week on your show saying they fit into theirs. Yeah, I probably could fit into mine, but you know, those were the days. Gone are those days.
Yeah, someone was bragging you yesterday. They can't fit into their blazer because their blazer would be too big for them now. It's like, really? You've got nice problems.
Rather be big. It's great.
Yeah.
I've actually just come back from just a dance class because I woke up feeling the unsettlement of what was going on for me in 1976. And I know the thing that moves trauma is when you move and dance. And so that's what I did. I danced in community because I needed to shake up the feelings, the nostalgic feelings that I was experiencing, you know, 41 years ago, because I was very much a youth 41 years ago on this campus. So that was a different place and time. Okay, so I have
well,
to
it's
so.
I'm not sure whether we yet have another country yet. I think we're still trying to create that new society. That's the sad thing.
Well, there was ignorance then, and today there isn't, which
yes,
is a relief.
That's true.
You know, the ignorance of being this person in a small town. And interesting, we spoke about Winnie last week a little. You know, I had a lot of awareness of her because I grew up in Bloemfontein, right? And Brantford was down the road. And one of Winnie's comrades lived across the road from me. So the police were really present in my life.
Wow.
Yeah, lots of memories come back. Okay, so we're going to talk about sex, I think. That's what we're here to do, not politics. We can separate the two.
Absolutely. Well, there's always politics lurking, at least with a small p everywhere. But we are talking, and we are talking particularly about teenage sexuality, which is very important. Mm. We already had a caller, our very first caller today in the open line, was having beef with the discussion that had happened on our breakfast show about condoms being distributed at school. And I parked that conversation with him because I thought we will partly get into exactly that kind of underlying attitude that teenagers don't have sexuality, which seemed to be the implicit premise that call was based on.
Right. So let's start with looking at what teenagers' lives are like, because I need to contextualize what's going on. And I'm basing this on the 2015 National Risk Youth Behavior Surveillance that was done in the United States, done every year. We have one over here in South Africa as well. And just some of the startling facts that I think are important for us to know so that we get out of a place of judgment and we understand why it is that young people do want to be sexual. So 30 days before the survey was conducted in 2015, 41%, we're looking at high school students, 41% of them, among the 61% who were driving, because in America they can drive at 16, they had texted or emailed while driving. 32% had drunk alcohol, 10% smoked cigarettes, 21% had used marijuana. During the previous 12 months, 15% had been electronically bullied, 20% had been bullied on school property, 8% had attempted suicide, 41% of students had ever had sexual intercourse, 30% were currently sexually active, 11.5% had had sexual intercourse with four or more people during their life. And this is under 18. 56 had used a condom during their last sexual intercourse, and 41% had played video or computer games or used a computer for something that was not school-related for 3 or more hours per day on average. So that is their world. They're locked into their devices, and they are looking for information for hormones that are very present and for lives that are very uncertain, as teenagers do feel. They fall pregnant. We have a huge incidence of unintended pregnancy in our own country. And we know that our incidence of HIV, AIDS, STIs is incredibly high amongst girls 15 to 24. This is stuff that we know. And coming off the back of the HIV AIDS conference that was held in Durban this week, we know that this number is not settling down in any way. Why is that? And it's so interesting for me, actually, Eusebius, that for all the years of many years of HIV AIDS conferences, the focus has always been on treatment. We've got to take care of this incredible epidemic. And I was delighted that the theme of this year's AIDS conference was prevention. How do we prevent young people being sexual? And this is what we're talking about today. You know, why are young people actually being sexual? And I'm wondering, you know, what's wrong with them being sexual? And I'd love to hear from listeners.
Absolutely.
And what do we do to actually get them to have sex that is pleasurable and that is responsible and that is also not going to be harmful to them but protective for their health?
Okay, 12 minutes after 11, give us a call. You heard Dr. E framing the issues for us very nicely, as she always does. And I'd love to know if you're an adult with a teenager in your life, do you have conversations with them about sex and sexuality? Do you know about their sexual habits, or do you still pretend that they are, in fact, asexual creatures? And if you are a teenager listening to this show or a young adult, give us a call. Tell us whether you feel comfortable discussing sex and sexuality with your parents, with other people. But also just share with us your attitude towards sex and sexuality and your own behavior. It is a safe space. If you have questions, problems that you're worried about, Dr. Eve will do her best to give you advice. 011-883-0702. That's our Johannesburg number. And in Cape Town, 021-446-0567. Before we take a break, we've got a couple of voice notes which are we're beginning to incorporate in our show, Dr. Eve, which is wonderful because sometimes people can't engage in real time. And we have some young people already speaking to this topic after we had done some throwing forward to it to tell us some of their attitudes, their experiences. So now, can we play those? I'm going to ask Dr. Eve to listen carefully as well. Then we'll take a break and we'll take both calls on the other side of the break. But we can also reflect on what these young people had to say about Dr. Eve's topic.
It wasn't an open conversation with my dad, but it was with my mom. She gave me a pep talk on how to use a condom. She bought me my own condom, said, you know, guys out there will do funny things to the condom, so make sure you have your own. I wasn't allowed to use contraceptives, but I mean, she did buy me condoms. So it was quite an open conversation.
The reason why teenagers are having sex is because of peer pressure, obviously. Because you see your friends doing it and you think it's cool to do it. And then you actually go out and do it without telling your parents and all of. Because honestly, my mom doesn't know I'm having sex. So that's another thing. You don't have an open relationship with your parents to actually talk about sex because they are more traditional and they feel that you need to get married first before you have sex. And it's not an easy topic to talk about in, yeah, now.
Well, I think growing up in the township, there's always that peer pressure around amongst your peers, amongst your friends. You know, especially when you get into your 15, 16, you know, there's that pressure, subliminal pressure that everyone else wants to, you know, it's like you have to cross that red line into now being popular, into starting into, you know, tasting something else that is so magical. And I think it comes out of that, and purely because the parents, especially in the townships, don't talk about it. They are not so open to educate their kids around issues of sex. They shy away from it. So you learn a lot of these things from the streets, and when you do, sometimes the experiment of it goes wrong, horribly wrong. Hence we see that there is so much teenage pregnancy happening.
Okay, fascinating. Give us a call as well if you want to engage this topic as a mom, as an older person, or also just casting your own mind back, because we were all teenagers once. Did you feel that you needed to be secretive? You heard some of the young people there saying, my parents don't know that I'm even having sex. Even contraceptive conversations can be quite awkward. You might get a condom, but not something else. So really very varied experiences. It is 16 minutes after 11, and this is adult conversation. Well, teenagers are invited to today in particular. And we'll hear what Dr. Eve has to make of some of those audio clips we just played on the other side of this.
702 and Cape Talk.
Talking sex.
15 minutes after 11, we're talking teenagers' sexual habits, their behavior, and also their attitudes towards sex, and also what conversations they're having among themselves and having or not having with you as an adult. Connie, we're going to come to you in a second. I thought those audio clips were really interesting, Dr. Eve.
Heartbreaking, actually, for me. You see, this is like, I keep saying, why does nothing change over all the years? Why is there still the same themes? Two things that I do want to pick up is that you can hear, please, parents who are listening, your children want to talk to you. All three of those voice messages mentioned parents, my mom, my dad. They want to get the information from you. That's what research is telling us, and here you have it in the real. The other thing, which this is absolutely congruent with what the research says, the number one, what we call driver for young people to be sexual, is peer pressure. And you heard the young man man saying that it leads to terrible consequences, because actually people misrepresent themselves. They're saying that they're being very sexual and they go into what he calls a magical place. Mm. And actually it isn't magical, because as he says, you're learning on the streets, and on the streets you're not going to get a value system, and you're not going to really learn about condoms and about oral contraception. So, you know, quite fascinating also the mixed message that the young woman got from her mom. You can have condoms, and gives her condoms, but says you can't have contraception. Like, what is that about? It's like an acknowledgement that you've been sexual, which I as a parent don't want to give you, but here, have some condoms, because I don't want you to fall pregnant or to, you know, get infected. I don't know.
I don't get it, yeah.
So like, we confuse, yeah. Imagine how younger brains feel.
Absolutely. It's like the Catholic Church telling me, you're allowed to be attracted to men, just don't have sex.
Well, exactly.
I mean, no, really.
Connie, good morning to you.
Morning, it's Lydia from Dr. Eve. You know what? I was just thinking, I think as parents, we need to stop really hiding behind culture, religion, because really our kids are having sex, whether we like it or not. It's just, we need to teach them. We need to be open about them. You know what? My niece, 4 years ago, came to me and said she was pregnant and she wanted to do abortion. I had, you know, like she asked me for money. She had done her research. She was ready to do the abortion. And all she needed was the money. And I said, because I've always been the aunt who would talk openly about sex with all my nieces and nephews. And I said to her, okay, fine, I'll help you. But as a mother, I thought, how do I help this child to do abortion when I'm not the parent? I'd rather it was the mother who was assisting, giving her the money if they were both agreed. Because this child and the boyfriend had agreed that they're not ready to be parents. You know what? Then I thought, no, look, I can't help you, because it's a risk. If I'm going to be in big trouble for doing that, not telling your mother. Thinking, if her mother had had the opportunity to speak to the child about sex all the time, it would have prevented her from going to somebody to say, can you assist me? I want to have an abortion. I mean, I have a 16-year-old child. We talk about sex almost every, you know, like every single day, every opportunity we have about talking about sex and alcohol, we talk about it, because I can't tell him about men's stuff because I'm not a man, but I can try and you know, educate him and talk to him about what it means to have sex, and say, if you're ready to have sex, here are the condoms. You have to, you know, to be open about it. It's not a secret. It's not a bad thing. Sex is not a bad thing, but you have to be responsible when you're going to have sex. You have to know what you're getting yourself into. You need to know the quality.
Connie, what happened? I'm curious. I want to know what happened with the abortion. Did she get a termination?
No, she didn't, because then there was no money to go, you know, to have the abortion. So when I refused in the last minute, then she kept the baby. You know, the baby is now, the boy is now 4 years old. But, you know, this is the thing. If she had spoken to her mother, maybe she wouldn't have had the child. And I do feel guilty that I could have helped her, because it messed up her education and all of this. But also, I'm not a parent. Why should I?
Yeah, I'm hearing you. You're struggling. I hear you were put into an incredible conundrum, and that you were struggling with making what would be a good ethical decision. And you keep going to the back to the fact, justifying your behavior. And I can hear it's painful for you that the mother should have taken responsibility. Honey, you passed up an opportunity, and I'm so sad about this, that you passed up an opportunity to help her. It doesn't matter. And Eusebius would say this, because he says it to me. Don't worry about ethics. You know, there is really something that this child is coming to you. Mm. And you should have, I'm sorry, I'm signing. Yeah, she doesn't like what I'm saying. Because I guess it feels terrible that there is such a weight on her shoulders. But, you know, if somebody comes to you for termination, the law allows it, please take her for counseling. Find the money. Don't be the one to hold her back because she can't tell her mom. Respect that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Sure. Let's go to the East Rand next, Dr. Eve. Julia, thank you so much for holding on.
I thought when the time was right many years ago that I should attempt to have a talk with my daughter, and I said, well, I think we should have a discussion about sex. So she said, right, what do you want to know? I never broach the subject with her again. I collapsed with laughter.
That is brilliant.
Okay, bye.
Thank you, Junior. I think that says it all, Eusebius, you know, that the young people have the information, but they don't have what the other voice message from the young man was saying. They don't have the correct information. And so parents, there is still such a huge role for you to step in and to give them your value system and to give them an ability to think critically. One of the other things that we do have to talk about, you know, along with condoms and contraception, please, please, please talk about consent. We live in a country with such a high rate of teen abuse that we need to teach our children from young, obviously, but certainly when they're older, about what consent means. And that means boys and girls, don't just talk to the girls and give them another huge responsibility of taking care of their sexuality or shutting it down.
And I want to throw that out as a request for mums and dads or whoever's entrusted with boys in their care to share your stories with us, because this is certainly not how we are framing the conversation, but often when we talk about teenage sexuality, termination of pregnancy, we really inadvertently talk about girls. Mm-hmm. Girls have sex with boys, and I would love to hear from our listeners, what conversations are you having with boys and young men? What are some of your sexual choices? Do you even understand consent? Has anyone ever have a conversation with you about consent? And if you are a dad, a mom, an older sibling, are you having conversations with boys about sex and sexuality? And what is the content of those conversations? How are they working out? 011-883-0702. And in Cape Town, share with us those stories on 021-446-0567. Because a conversation about teenage sexuality is not a conversation about girls, boys, and gender non-conforming teens as well. Carol, welcome to the show.
I'm enjoying your show tremendously. I've got two grandsons, and when they were in junior school, they wanted to know about how babies were born. So I said, okay, I would tell them. And they said, oh, no, they can't discuss that with me. So I said, fine, I would buy a book, and then they could read the book. So we started reading the book together, and they said, no, they can't do this with me. So I said, okay, fine, read the book, and if you've got any questions, you come and ask me, which they did, because my son and daughter-in-law were just too embarrassed to talk to the boys about that. And we explained everything, and they've got this book, and they've never asked me another question. You have to be upfront with the children. You can't hide it.
Well, you certainly added a huge protective factor to your grandsons by opening up the topic and making yourself available, and then using what's called the teachable moments when they could come to you, that their parents weren't ready for it. So well done to you for doing that, because kids who do not get that information are much higher at risk, and there's loads of research at this stage that we know to become infected in unintended pregnancies. But Carol, add on, don't just stop talking to them because you've given them the basic reproductive facts. Talk to them about gender. Talk to them about LGBTI, because you have no idea who they're going to fall in love with or be attracted to or want to be in relationship. Talk to them about their bodies. Talk to them about how to treat each other and respect, and talk about love. This is part of the curriculum, which, you know, I'm really insistent that in schools need to be part of that. The conundrums that come along with love, and especially with social media, where people, young people, are absolutely confused as to their status of situation with the person, which impacts on their sexual decision making.
Absolutely. Pumla tweets, hello Pumla, my fave. My mom was great with body talk, Eusebius, but no sex talk really. As a mom and aunt now, I cringe, but I always answer fully. That is Pumla caller. And Pumla also says it's very important that we in fact do have these conversations about consent with children and children of all genders, including already breaking out of the language of the binary. By the way, Connie, the phone dropped. Connie is very happy to continue the conversation. She tweeted back, Dr. Eve. So let's have Connie back. How's it, Connie? Thank you so much for coming back. I really appreciate it. Are you there, Connie?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear.
Yeah, sorry. I didn't have airtime and it was a bit
No, it's okay. It's recession, Connie. Don't worry. This one is on me. Dr. Eve, what did you want to say further to Connie? Because you had some reflections while Connie was sharing.
Yeah, that I wanted to empathize with you, because I'm sure this is a burden that you carry. around not having made a decision for this young girl. And I hope that you can find acceptance with your decision. I don't want you to suffer because you have made this decision. And my call out is to other people, Connie. I mean, would you do it differently? Would you do it differently today?
Look, Dr. Eve, I'd still do it the same way I did it. Because, firstly, it's not my child. That's my issue. Like, I'm not the parent. Why am I going to take... Why should I take that step? To, you know what I mean? I mean, if it's my child, if my child was to come to me today and say, Mommy, I'm pregnant, can we, you know, let's talk about me having an abortion. We can discuss it, talk about it. But there's emotional impact after that. The child needs to be able to deal with the issues, the after effects of having an abortion. And so, I wasn't sure if the abortion was because they were just freaked out or really they wanted to do it. And I couldn't really get into the details, you know, because I'm not the parent. I cannot be
questioning. I hear you over and over. I'm hearing you. And what about as a solution? Because for parents who are listening, it might be in the same difficulty. How about you acting as, not you, anyone in your position, acting as mediator between the parent and the child? Because I just feel just absolutely desperately uncomfortable about having this child being let down and knowing the consequences of an unintended pregnancy, as you said, to her education and to the child, because it puts a child at risk. We know this. It puts a child at risk also of not having education and having another an unintended pregnancy. So how about mediation as an alternative?
You know, so if there's been dire consequences for this child, because I see her all the time, and, you know, she has lost almost everything because of the child, okay? And I would say to parents, I mean, I could have gone to her mother to speak to her mother, but when you have people who are so obsessed about culture and religion that you cannot penetrate, even when they're family, you as somebody who comes and say, but you know, this is not how we should be thinking. We need to be given a platform to think. And they say, oh, you're coming with this westernized mind and all of that. You become, when you're the only one, you cannot put in the corner to not voice yourself, because then everybody else says, this is not how I grow up. This is not what I was taught. When I talk to my son about sex, when my son tells his uncle he's got a girlfriend, you see the look, the way they look at me, they all say to me, what are you teaching this child? We didn't have boyfriends of this child. And the answer is, this is my child. I'm going to raise him the best way I know how. And the best
Doctor, can we just do this? I just want to take EWN News headlines, and then we can puzzle through. Thank you so much for calling in, Connie. Some of the issues. It's very interesting. If a child comes to you as an aunt, as someone they can trust who's not mom or dad, how do you handle that responsibility? And how should you view a teenager as a person that can consent to termination, and therefore you give them the right to make their choice? Or do you say, well, it's not my call to even give you advice? I want Dr. Eve to ventilate that fully.
702 and Cape Talk.
Talking sex.
24 minutes before noon. There was an interesting couple of issues there that I wanted to touch on, and I'm sure others for you as well, Dr. Eve. The first is, if I am the uncle or the sibling or whoever, a teacher for that matter, and a teenager comes to me and they talk about their sexuality, they're thinking of an abortion, for example, how does one puzzle through that? I know you've got some strong views on this, because for Connie, it was a case of Akasidikan Samani. What should one do?
I do have strong views around this, because just from a legal point, let's start with the legal point of view, that our country has worked very hard to institute a law that says termination should be given and is a right of everyone. I mean, that was one of the first laws that was promulgated in 1996, actually, a termination of pregnancy. And it gives young people the right to reproductive health and rights over their bodies, which is really, really an important right that they have. And in fact, it says that anyone from age 12, any young woman from age 12 upwards, has the right to terminate her pregnancy without the consent of a parent, to be able to get emergency contraception, to be able to take ARVs and to protect herself from HIV, or to treat herself with HIV if she is infected. There is wonderful, wonderful recognition that young people have rights. And I think that we are, by turning young person away, it almost feels like a travesty to me, Eusebius. I'm really uncomfortable with it. And I'm not judging you, Connie, because I do not, cannot put myself into your situation. And it's a very difficult space you were put into. I do agree with you, because I heard you say right in the beginning that don't let culture and religion, let's stop hiding behind that.
Mm.
I agree with you around that. In fact, in my on my blog, on my site, one of the points that I've made is to say, don't let religion be your go-to place in providing protection for your child, because it isn't going to be that. And it's a difficult minefield to try and navigate through culture and through religion. But the thing is, here is a child who was in need, and here is a child who came to you, seeing you as somebody who she could lean on, and that's a huge compliment and it is a huge responsibility for you. To answer you, let me leave Connie out of it because it feels like I'm attacking her. I think that you do have an obligation. I do believe that you do. Healthcare providers do, and they even had to amend that act because healthcare providers were feeling, I don't want to be doing it, terminations, and the act changed. It had to adapt to say, okay, if you're not going to do it and we respect that you're uncomfortable with it, please, you have to refer this young woman on. So it really works hard to let young women have their right exercised to be able to get termination. And I just feel very uncomfortable that we stand in the way of a young woman, especially because of money. Let her, you know, guide her to a place where she can go lend money or find money. But this is a decision that she made, and you needed to respect that.
Absolutely. Katlego, good morning.
Morning, sir. Hello.
Welcome to the show, Katlego.
All right. It's been Katlego. I'm from Soshanguve in Pretoria. I remember when I was I'm 25 years old now, and I was when I was a teenager, I remember the first time I saw my pubic hair. Yo, it was something unbelievable. I was thinking, what is these things? I went to my grandma running, and I asked her, hey, Coco, what are these things? The only answer she responded to me, she just said, you're becoming a man, that's all. Then I was just confused. How am I becoming a man by growing hair on my penis or on my... I was confused.
Mm.
And then all throughout my years, the only advice I could get about sex and stuff is during my life orientation textbooks when I was busy studying them. That was the only time I could understand what was happening to my body. But nonetheless, the adults around me were too scared to even advise me how to navigate around life with regards to sex. So now I have a daughter, and then I hope I'll be more open to her about sex and all those things. And I just think that people should be more open about it.
Katlego, I'm fascinated. Mm. Okay, so obviously Gogo's answer that you're becoming a man doesn't help you much in terms of your behavior, understanding the bodily changes. What happened to your sexuality once you started having pubic hair and now your body is changing and your hormones are changing? How did that play out for you in the next couple of years?
Well, when it comes to sex, I don't know how to explain it, but I think that I got formally sexually active around 17. And when it came to that moment, I didn't even know what to do. I didn't even wear the condom properly. I struggled with it quite a while. Even the girl was just staring at me like that. What's going on with this guy? You know, you navigate by yourself around this world, around sex, and then you teach yourself some things that maybe a man or a woman in your life should have been at least teaching you about those things: how to wear a condom, how to even carry a condom, how to use it. So, unfortunately, I didn't have that kind of support, and then you just learn through it on the streets. You ask your friends, you ask somebody else to just teach me how to have sex, because having sex is not like something you can just do. You must learn how to do it, how your partner should respond to it, how you should enjoy it. But nobody was open enough to me to at least know those kind of things.
How old is your daughter, Katlego?
My daughter is, I think she's turning 11 months this month.
Okay.
11 months, yeah. So I recently became a father.
That's congratulations, yeah.
Thank you.
Dr. Eve, some of your reflections there?
Yeah, a heartache, really. Katlego, a question, and you really don't have to answer this. Was your pregnancy planned?
No, it wasn't.
Okay, this is what I suspected. I'm sure you love your baby, and you will love
your baby. Yeah, but you know, many thoughts when especially the woman in your life tells you that I'm pregnant, when she tells you that she's pregnant, and you know the legislation around women and children and men taking care of their kids, it's it's a bit, I don't know how can I put it, but sometimes it puts you as a father aside and concentrates on the mother and the child. So I was very, you know, in our African traditions, especially when you have a kid out of wedlock, they might put you aside, and then the kid grows up and you only provide financial support without having any kind of relationship with the child. So I was praying all the time so that my the mother of my child can just adhere to her promise and make me a part of this her life and the child's life, and that nothing else will just interfere with our relationship. Because by virtue of being an unmarried father, I have limited benefits to the child, and I have to prove that how do I partake in this child's life. And then the only way to prove it most of the time is financial terms, and it seems like other things are disregarded. So Katlego, I was just praying with God to this aspect. Yeah.
Thanks, Katlego.
Yeah, you got to get good legal advice. Go to legal aid, because there are a lot of benefits for dads. This country wants men to be involved, and legislation is in your favor. Don't be sidetracked by what people on the street are telling you, or what maybe this the mother of your baby is telling you, that she just wants money and you don't have the right to any kind of access to the baby. You do. You absolutely do. And it doesn't even matter, you know, what anyone else says. You must be present in her life. She needs her dad. So you just make a commitment to, as I can hear you are doing to yourself and to your child, be there. Imprint yourself on her life. We don't want people, babies growing up without dads being present.
Absolutely. A couple of tweets coming through. Cheryl says, Eusebius, parents don't want to talk about sex and yet are shocked when kids get pregnant. If you didn't give me the info, where did you think I would in fact be getting it from? Mullen tweets, thank you, Eusebius and Dr. E, for this topic. I beg of parents to educate their kids about sex, alcohol and drugs all the time. This is real, and it really, really, really matter. Elvis asks, why does Dr. Eve endorse abortion so easily, as if it doesn't come with far-reaching traumatic problems? Please let children live. We're going to have to ventilate that as a self-standing topic. Mm-hmm. But I want to give you a chance to respond to Elvis. Many people engage the abortion topic as a moral question mm-hmm. about when life begins, which is why I thought that you deliberately and rightly started with the legal and constitutional framework and the rights of teenagers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people are entitled to their own opinion. We have, you know, the right to life, and then people who really do believe that there is the right to terminate as well. And so obviously I'm going to support people's right to terminate, because it is a choice that has far-reaching consequences. And I deliberately asked Katlego about whether his child was intended or not intended, because of that is one of the consequences. If you do not provide sexuality education, if you do not protect your children from unintended pregnancies, you're going to perpetuate that system where there are more and more unintended pregnancies, and these children are going to also become parents too early, and the risks just keep increasing. And it has an enormous economic impact on our country. You know, there are so many consequences to it. It isn't just a matter of ethics or morality or religion. For me, it is a bigger picture that we have to take into consideration around giving the child appropriate counseling. You can't just give an abortion or send somebody for an abortion. It has to be counseling. The child has to be held. The young person has to be held in a professional space and told all the different options that are available. And then let them, you know, respect their decision and considering their entire context.
Martha, welcome to the conversation.
Hi. You see this, you know, I'm afraid there lies an assumption that all children, young people, have parents. Well, that's not a fact. There are many, many young people whose parents died due to the HIV/AIDS mm-hmm. pandemic this country went through. I work with a lot of those children. Amongst those children are LGB children, parentless, and a host of young people. So every child, and I think most adults, needs to change their attitude. Your child is my child, and my child is your child. And when we begin to adopt our children as young people, we are able to contribute to their lives. Now, amongst the young people that I work with, I also have a lot of disappointment, because I gather about 20 to 30 young people, and I would say, okay, let's just talk about sanitary towels. And so I call in a nursing sister and people who have more experience, and I excuse myself from the conversation simply because I don't want them to feel threatened by my presence there. But in spite of all that, the peer pressure at school is so much that these very young people that you have put so much into do fall pregnant at the age of 15. And when I look at what could have gone wrong, I find the child lost their mother 2 years ago. She felt abandoned. And so she tries to find love somewhere else. So what's missing in our schools, I find, is that there's not a platform for the community mothers to come in and address what pregnancy is. And what the consequences of that are, and what do you have to do, and an open platform where young people can really express themselves because they're not going to find it in the home most of the time. Thank you.
Martha, yeah, thank you for the work that you're doing. And what you're alluding to is that there is huge complexity in reasons of why young people choose to be sexual. One of the big reasons are because they just desire to be loved. They want to feel special by somebody. Another reason, interestingly enough, is boredom. And the kids that you are talking about who are AIDS orphans, HIV AIDS orphans, they would be suffering from trauma. One would assume that there would be a level of trauma. And if there is a level of trauma, there is going to be less ability to regulate emotions and to think rationally. And being sexual or getting the attention or feeling somebody wants you overrides any caution or protection. And that's why one of the reasons why we have so much unintended pregnancies and really high-risk behavior in our country, which is filled with traumatized young people. So we want to be able to protect them by giving them education, by being able to be there. And I love your idea of, you know, what you basically say is Ubuntu, that we really got to see children as all of our responsibility and to look after high-risk kids and kids who are in trouble. So I appreciate what you're doing.
Beautiful stuff. Dr. Eve, we're going to leave it there. Next week, I hope to see you in person. I'll be in Cape Town.
Oh, wow. I'm so excited.
I'm more excited than you. Have a stunning.
What we're going to do then, we're going to take on our really difficult topic that we've spoken about.
Yes.
We'll do that.
Absolutely.
All right.
Have a beautiful weekend and a week ahead. Cheers.
Bye now.